listening to the Forza Podcast with your host, Marsh.
What up? What up? It is the Forza Podcast. It is Marsh. I don't know what has gotten into me, guys, but I am excited. I'm excited to be here. I don't know if it's, I don't know what happened. Because sports has been gone for 2 weeks. I should be miserable. I just drove 15 hours yesterday to California and back. I should be in hell. But, like, I am so happy to be here right now. And, as always, I am joined by my wonderful producer and wonderful co-host. He's very good looking. He's a great man, Jordan Nelson. Jordan, talk to me, baby.
I'm doing good, man. Better with your flattery. You know that? Boosted my day a little bit, but dude, things are good here. Just busy, you know.
Absolutely.
Glad you're feeling good. You know, we got like a week and a half of depressed Marsh pictures all over the timeline, and I'm glad that exuberant Marsh is making a comeback.
Can I say something about depressed Marsh real quick?
Yes.
Depressed Marsh will become like a national phenomenon. Like it will. It will be like people around the country will know that picture. That picture is so classic. But honestly, over the past week and a half, I'm not really so much depressed Marsh. I'm fat Marsh. Like the gyms are closed.
Yep.
I have just been eating and eating and eating. And I don't know if I need to start taking Adderall so I can lose weight. But like I got to do something, Jordan.
That's the healthiest way to lose the weight, but you know, you got to do what works, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's no glory without sacrifice. I'm not going to run. I'm not going to start running or work. I'm not going to like start doing sprints.
Yeah. My diet was going pretty well for a minute. And then, man, the last 4 days have been rough. So, yeah. You know, I'm retaining some water weight right now, I should say. But
I know we have some guests to get to. We have an incredible show and an incredible week. I'm going to get to that in a sec. But have you ever been to, like, Raising Cane's Chicken? There's a few in Vegas.
Yes, I actually went to one in Reno. But yeah, that's good stuff, man.
So we picked up my brother last night, my missionary brother. I'm so happy to have him back. I love the kid. You guys have all seen how excited I am. Maybe he'll come on the podcast. Maybe he won't because he's just so much better looking than me. He's taller than me. I saw him last night and I'm like, I have a gap tooth and like I'm chubbier. I had like – that's why I had to wear my gold watch and my suede shoes so at least I look kind of good. But he's like 6'6". I'm like 6'6". 5'11". I have a widow's peak. He looks like a stallion. Anywho.
Hey, also have a very successful Miami Hurricanes podcast.
And he does not, so suck it. But he wanted to stop off at Raising Cane's last night.
Uh-huh.
And it is heavy. That is heavy food. And I ate it and I remember sticking my head out the window because I thought I was gonna puke and looking at the strip and I'm thinking, I'm gonna die right here.
This is rock bottom.
Exactly. In an evacuated Las Vegas, I'm going to die. But anywho, I could talk about how miserable and pathetic I am. I am the happiest damn person on the planet right now. This is going to be the first of three shows this week. Yeah. Jordan and I had a really very productive text messaging conversation at 3:30 in the morning last night. Yeah. We're always awake at the weirdest hours.
No, it's true. I think most of the business building that we've done has been 3:30 a.m. or later.
Yeah, I don't like. I'm sure people on Twitter know that I don't sleep in general, and now they're like starting to catch on to you and like. But it's like screw it, like yeah. We're kicking ass. No,
remember the text message conversation that actually, like. Made the Fours Up podcast an actual thing. It was like 3 days before we recorded our first episode. Remember that? That was at 5 a.m, and neither of us had slept. Yeah.
Well, I'll be darned.
Yeah, it was. We planned it out. Came over to your place, and we pumped out episode one. It's good stuff.
Yeah, and now look at us. We're at episode 17. We're going, like, I don't want to sound I don't know if cocky Marsh.
Look at
does
us.
Does cocky Marsh come out right now?
I don't know, dude. That's good, right? Confidence kills.
Yeah. And yeah, we have so many good things lined up for you guys this week. I mean, lined up for us. I mean, if you listen, we don't care. We get to talk to freaking Canes fans and Canes players. So, we love you. Okay, we got three guests tonight. Let's get to the first one. What the hell's his name?
Xavier.
Xavier, yeah. I always just think of his Twitter name.
Monster
let's get him on. Let's just get the bastard on.
Okay, I'm donning him up now. Xavier, what's up, brother? You're on Fours Up.
Hey, what's going on?
Xavier, it's Marsh. Thanks for coming on, bro.
What's going on, Marsh? How you doing?
Pretty good, brother. Pretty good. So we got Xavier. Most people know him from his Twitter handle at MonstaX. He's with Caneville. Do you run that account, by the way, Caneville?
Yeah, me and the other guy, Streeter, who runs Footballville, we run both of the accounts together.
Okay. Good deal, good deal. I mean, I've seen you at Kane's practice when we were both covering, and we never met, but we've interacted many times on Twitter, whether it was about Tootsies or the Canes. But let me start off, because you're a Cowboys fan too, right?
Yeah, I'm a Cowboy fan. We just got some bad news too, man.
I was just about to ask you about that. Travis Frederick, our starting center, he just retired. What are your thoughts?
I'm upset, but I understand him. You know, he done did his diligence, so his body probably tired, but we need to fix that ASAP, because without him, our offensive line ain't no good.
Yeah, I know. I know spring – you were at the first week of spring camp, and that was 2-3 weeks ago, and obviously we don't have football right now. Just quickly, what were your quick thoughts from spring camp at Green Tree?
Like I tell everybody, I say you can't really get a full assessment about the first week of spring. It was only 1 week, and then they got into pass the final day, which was on Friday. So you really can't get a full assessment of what went on. But I will say, normally, the defense is a lot faster than the offense. But this year, the offense was a lot faster, way faster than the defense. And it was okay, they looking like they ready to do something.
That's good to hear. I mean, that's what we've been begging for a while.
It's about time they use the speed we have.
Yeah. I mean, what were your thoughts about Derek King in particular?
Believe it or not, my first thought was when I seen him, I was like, oh my gosh, he's short. So short.
I knew that was coming.
And he was standing next to Tate, and I'm like, okay, Tate is short. I'm like, oh, we can't go through this again. We have another short quarterback. All right, let's see where this goes. And then as I'm watching them do the drills, the quarterback drills, he just looks like he's ready to take command. Like he looked like a quarterback. You know, between our last couple of years, we haven't had a quarterback that just demands the command that a quarterback's supposed to have. And he stepped in right away. It looks like he demanded it. So he's demanding the receivers play a lot better, which the first week, I mean, it was amazing. I didn't think – I'm like, oh, who these receivers are, because they wasn't like that last year or the year before. So, but this year, for that first week, they was looking like, oh, okay, we got this.
All right, sorry about that. I had some technical difficulties, so the recording cut out while Xavier was answering the question. But we're going to pick back up with what Marsh just asked him.
Okay, so yeah, I was asking Xavier, what is the biggest difference between Jaren Williams on the practice field and Derek King on the practice field, and then also the biggest difference between Dan Enos and Rhett Lashley?
I'm gonna start with the Jaren Williams and Derek King. The difference between the both obviously his experience. You know, King has the experience. He's, you know, he's been playing a lot longer in the collegiate level. And as I stated earlier, it looked like he's demanding the receivers to do certain things rather than last year. You see Jaren goes out there and he's just going with the flow. And I think a lot has to do with the second part of the question is with Lashley is he's more persistent with the whole entire offense instead of it just being about the quarterback. You know, last year, Enos, he was quarterback. You know, he'll yell and fuss at the other positions and stuff, but it was quarterback. And he was so about their footwork, and their footwork wasn't bad. It was just, why are they doing so many footwork drills when the O-line isn't that good? So you see the difference between the offensive coordinators. One, he's the entire offense. Let's get the entire offense going. Then last year, I'm going to worry about my quarterbacks and everybody else coach their position.
So absolutely.
Football don't work like that. If you call it the play. If you're the offensive coordinator, you got to worry about the whole entire offense.
Okay, and so let's move to defense. And, you know, you and I have talked a lot on Twitter about the linebacker situation. We obviously have Zach McLeod, and then we got these two young pups. We got Avery Huff and Sam Brooks. Sam Brooks is injured at the moment. Tell us what you like about these two guys, because I'm really big on them, especially Avery Huff. And I know you're a big Brooks guy, if I'm not mistaken. So what do you like about these two guys moving forward at Miami?
Sam Brooks and Avery Huff are fast. They could run. And we lacked that for years. We lacked running with the linebacker position, which is why we created that striker position. Because we don't have that third linebacker that could run with the running back out the backfield or tight end. So with Avery Huff and Sam Brooks, they're both athletic enough to run. Now, Sam Brooks, the only issue I have right now with him is he needs a full year of rehabilitation. His knee is not where it should be. He should have redshirted last year, in my opinion. But he was thin. They had to plug him in. So hopefully they don't rush him back right away. Being that we have this time off, you know, all of the linebackers, even the incoming freshmen who came in, all of them could rehab and be ready for the upcoming season. But if Sam Brooks and Avery Huff is on the field, we're pretty much good because both are aggressive and they both can run. Avery Huff is pretty much a safety playing linebacker.
So, wow. Yeah, that's good. I mean, you know, as long as he is hitting like a linebacker and has the size, I mean, that's a great thing to hear.
Yeah, he could hit. The only thing I would say we haven't seen much with is them getting off blocks.
Okay.
With Shaq and Pickney, they was good at that. Not saying great at it, but they were good at it to dictate where the block was going and where they could get through the hole. So that's the only thing they got to learn. And they're going to have to learn fast, obviously.
So, I mean, hopefully that doesn't reflect in our run defense. I mean, that was, you know, that's over the last 2 years, that's been one of our strengths, was that we could, you know, really clamp down on the run sometimes when we had to. So, I mean, hopefully we include that with Shaq and Mike.
Well, we hoping it's going to be good because our D-line is expected to be pretty good this year. So as of now, I don't think any team going to be able to block any one of our defensive linemen one-on-one.
Yeah.
So you're just saying if it's five offensive linemen with our four, somebody has to double team either Greg Russo or Quincy. And then even if you take him out, you got Phillips is like, he done gained about another 20 pounds. He look like he had about like 260 now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so with our run defense, it all comes down to who's going to anchor the middle. Is it going to be Nesta or Ford or Miller?
Yeah.
Yeah. One of them three going to have to hold that line up where, you know, the linebackers can run free and make the tackles.
Yeah. Okay, and I was gonna ask you, because there's been so much talk about the defensive ends with Russo and Jalen Phillips and Roche. What are your thoughts on our defensive tackles? Because Nesta, I think, has the talent, but he hasn't been able to catch the checks. I mean, his mouth is just running right now. And I like Jordan Miller. I like John Ford. What are your thoughts on our defensive tackles?
With Miller and Ford, you got your nose tackle who they're going to take up the blockers and open the lanes for the linebackers to run. With Nesta Severo, you have he's quick, athletic. He has an amazing first step off the line. When he's healthy, he could get the job done. Yes, everybody say he's all talk. They didn't play much his freshman year. Got hurt at the beginning of last year. Came on strong. You know, it's kind of hard for somebody to just jump right in without game experience and practice. So, but being that he's going to have a whole full year healthy, you know, he should get the job done. And then here goes the problem. The backups, you know, we real young, gonna be real young. So I know the staff is very high on what's his name? What's the guy's name?
We got Harrison Hunt, we got Blissett, and we got what's the other dude?
Brissette is the one that played basketball in high school, right? Whichever one that played basketball, the staff is hiring. I can't pin his name just yet, but he's athletic. Now that's the thing. The young D tackles are athletic.
Yeah.
Which is good, but being an athletic defensive tackle isn't always good because you can get pushed around easily. You know, a la Wisconsin. You know, them boys mauled out D line 20 yards every play. So, but I think Diaz and Baker got it back to where they just rather play fast on defense instead of saying we're gonna be big, we're gonna play fast, which can screw up a lot of offenses if you're playing fast, because a lot of them offenses use timing. So it's kind of, we'll see. I'm 50-50 with it, but hey man, we here now, so we just got to deal with it.
Yeah, no, I feel you. So I've been wanting to, I've been panicking about our defensive back all spring. What can you tell me about them? I'm hoping that you can give me some good news or some encouragement, because I'm just really worried about our corners right now.
The best corner I think we have is going to be Corey Couch. I think he's the best cover corner we have. Everybody he's covered, even last year to this year, everybody he's covered, he's on their hip. You know, he's a little small and short, but he's on their hip. He has great speed. He'll come up and tackle you if you have to. The only thing is he's just small, so he's obviously not going to be able to play against the taller receivers, but Al Blaze and Ivy both look like they put on some weight. They looked fluid. They looked good out there running. I mean, like I say, it was just the offense was a lot faster than the defense this year so far. And yeah, you know, you see some struggles because, for one, they young back there. They don't have no leadership. It's, you know, the oldest guys are juniors. You know, it's kind of hard to take leadership when you still young yourself. You know, so.
Yes. No, absolutely.
But it is what it is. You know, you got to line up and play. Blaze did a pretty good job last year for the most part. He just has to. They got to start getting turnovers.
Yeah.
You know. And that's the only thing. Ivy, you know, sometimes. And then, you know, sometimes you have a good game. Sometimes you have a bad game. And then it leads over to the next game. You know, Ivy's issue was he had a bad game, some games, and it leads over to the next game. You know, like I say, they're young. So they don't know how to chalk that up and go to the next play. And then on the back end, I think we in pretty good hands with Hall, Carter, and Bubba.
Yeah.
And I'm telling everybody right now, you expect Avante Williams is going to play. Like, people saying redshirt, I'm saying that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
He's going to play.
I feel great about our safeties, too. I should have said corners specifically, because that's – I mean, I'm worried about the number of bodies we got back there. You know, we only got four or five dudes that are even on scholarship.
Yeah, we have – I think right as of right now on campus, we have four only.
Yeah.
And then two more coming. So all together, we'll only have six. Now, the good thing about that is all six will be back next year. But, yeah. You know, we talk about this year. So, but like I say, again, I'm pretty confident with what they got. Because, you know, in today's game, you really don't have lockdown corners as often as you used to. Because the ball coming out so quick. So, you know, if our D-line giving you that pressure, then, you know, we pretty much gonna the corners gonna do a good job.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. I mean, looking forward to recruiting. I mean, do you think we're going to take, like, how many do you think we're going to take? I was thinking we have to take at least three or four.
Okay, say that again.
I said I was thinking that we have to take at least three or four corners in this next class. I mean, for recruiting.
The standard number each year is to take three cornerbacks. You know, we just haven't been meeting the numbers yearly, and then being that the scholarship limit, we could take three. But I see what Banda and Diaz and Baker does. What they do is they recruit safeties who can play corner. You know, so it kind of say, well, if we don't get them top corners, we can still get a top safety who can play corner. Like, you got Avante Williams who can play corner.
Yeah.
So now it's like...
I mean, that's kind of the rumor is that he'll get some burn at slot corner this year. I mean, do you think we'll see that happen?
Yeah, I think so. It's like, because I think they tried to do the same thing with Hall his freshman year. Give him a little burn at slot. Didn't really work too good, but I think Hall is a lot more athletic and at that position. I mean, Williams is a lot more athletic at that position. But again, you know, it's hard to tell, you know, because right now we only been in a one week of spring, you know, no practice. So you never know.
Okay. Xavier, let me ask you two more questions before we let you go. First one, is there any chance we get James Williams? What are the odds we get if we land James Williams?
Hey, everybody been asking me this question for about like 4 years now. I kind of got a good answer to telling people. I think personally, I have two answers to this. Personally, I think we land him because he's a kid who loves Miami. He loves it. He loves Miami. He loves Coach Banda. He loves Coach Diaz. He loves everything about Miami. He loves Sean Taylor. I'm talking about, you ask him about Sean Taylor, the kid will smile. You know, now the other question, I mean, the other answer I would give is, sometimes I tell people, I say sometimes some kids do need to leave. You know, he's been through so much his life. His whole life he's been through so much. So sometimes a new start is good for him. But I'm not saying that he's not looking at Miami. He's really looking at Miami. You know, like every kid, they want to see if Miami going to be good. Kids really tired of the 7-6 and the 6-7, the 8-4. They want to see UM again. So
they want to see their hometown team do good, just like I want to see my hometown team do good.
Exactly. A lot of the kids, they say, man, look, if you them good, they got a chance to get. You know, if you them not good, then hey, why not go to the Georgias and the Clemsons, Alabamas and us?
Yeah. Okay. And so my second question, X, is we talked about this earlier today. Jacoby George, I'm a big fan of him. What do you think of him?
I love how he moves in the slot. At his school, they work him a lot on the outside, but he's a slot receiver. And he will excel in the new offense. And that's another recruit I think we land. You know, just got to show him on the field, him. And there's a couple other receivers that's down here that just want to see what you do on the field.
But you do think that Jacoby George comes to Miami?
Yeah, I think he comes. He could be one on commit watch. He could have been on commit watch if it was spring still going on into the summer. You could have seen him on commit watch, especially if they announced they're going to do a Paradise camp. He's one that you could see on commit watch probably.
Okay. Well, dang, man, those were two pretty good answers to end off the interview, bro. Hey, thank you so much for coming on the show, Xavier. You're welcome anytime to come back on, brother, and we love chatting it up with you on Twitter.
Yeah, no, man, no problem, man. Thank you for having me. You know, when we do get the season up, I see everybody keep asking me about the famous tailgates we have.
I've never been to one.
Man, y'all welcome to come. Welcome to come, man. And
hey, this is all like, hey, man.
Let's do it.
Yeah, we're going to do it, man. When not ready, just let me know. If y'all in Miami, just let me know. I'm always down to meet up.
Sounds good.
All right, brother. We'll be in touch, man. Thanks for coming on again. Go Canes.
Go Canes.
Go Canes, brother. All right, sick, man. Xavier was a great guest.
I like talking to people who know football, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Because I can say all day, Brevin Jordan, I could tweet out like three times a week, Brevin Jordan is the best tight end in football. I don't know. I don't really know what the hell I'm talking about. I mean, I kind of do, but not really.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, like, you know, everyone kind of has their fan shades on, you know, that skews the thing. But, you know, I mean, the only way to combat that is to have some legitimate football knowledge. And, you know, Xavier has a whole bunch more than I ever will. So,
it's good. It's good. Hey, I mean, that's what we just got to keep learning. And I also want to apologize to the listeners. I know I probably sound in and out with my service. I'm up in the damn mountains in southern Utah. I'm up at our ranch and I had to drive to the nearest town. And I'm at a really sketchy Sinclair gas station and people are staring at me because I'm talking loud and I'm sweating right now because the sun is on me. I'm sweating, Jordy. And oh my gosh, this podcast is going to be so good, but I have to just jump through the hoops to get to it. sweating through my Adidas hat. I look like trash.
Oh yeah. It's still going to be a good episode, but we've had our fair share of technical difficulties so far, but it ain't going to stop us. And Depressed Marsh is not going to have a showing today, is he?
Hey, no. Hell no, bro. I mean, this kind of stuff, like my father says, it only happens to the best of families.
Yep, that's right.
Right? I mean, that sounds pretty cool. That sounds pretty good. Oh, this guy just walked out. That guy must have like four cases of White Claw. Good Lord. Oh my gosh, he's going to have a fun night. Ugh. Sorry, I'm just observing from my car. This is what I do when I can't gamble anymore. I just come to a gas station and bet on who buys beer or not.
He's just going to drive past the campus at Dixie State. You know, see how many 19-year-old white girls he can get to come with him.
Yeah, I'll already be there doing the same thing. I'll be looking for a girl to take on a double date with you and your girl, Jordy.
Oh, yeah. That's,
so if anyone out there, if any girls listen to this, I doubt it. If you ever want to go on a double date, fly out to Utah. I won't fly out, but
yeah,
I'll buy for your dinner. I'll pay for your dinner.
My girlfriend can just talk about coyotes and dogs and other animals that she's into for seemingly forever, which is what it's felt like for the last 2 years.
That was classic.
The podcast, so I'm going to get away with that one.
Hopefully she doesn't listen to that part.
Yeah. No, she did a Twitter takeover, I'm sure. You know, I bet most of you guys follow me on Twitter, so you probably saw, but she's a goofball. So
hey, so am I though. I'm a freaking maniac, man. Like,
yeah,
but can you imagine like being a boring piece of crap? Like, I couldn't be boring. That would be hell.
Well, that's exactly what I was gonna say. Is like, I'd rather be around people that are interesting than people that are just bland, you know? Like,
yeah.
What's the point of life if you just kind of go with the flow and you're everything that society wants you to be, you know? What fun is that?
My God, my stomach is just protruding through my seatbelt right now, but I completely understand what you're saying. I mean, I've gone through stages where I try to be the cool guy, you know, cool Marsh. I mean, I'm still cool as hell. Like, don't get me wrong, I'm damn cool. But like, I'm being myself, you know? Like, I'm goofy. Like, it's okay to be goofy.
Yeah.
I'm like a skinny Chris Farley. Not skinny for long, but skinny Chris Farley.
Well, you know what they say is any pizza is a personal pizza if you believe in yourself, right?
Who the hell said that?
I don't know. I read it somewhere.
Who said that? Dan Enos?
You mean Cincinnati running backs coach Dan Enos?
Yes, and we have to make a rule. We cannot say his name. He who shall not be named.
Okay.
That's a new rule.
Yeah. Okay, deal.
Is our second guest ready to come on?
Yeah, he's ready now. Let me message him and make sure. Yeah, so he just needs just a few moments. But yeah, I was gonna say, like, I was always one of those kids where, like, I don't know, I just kind of naturally fit into the group of kids that weren't weirdos, but we all had, like, I found a good group of friends where, you know, we could talk about the NBA and sports, and we'd play sports together and stuff. But then we were also, like, all into sci-fi and fantasy stuff. And, you know, like, at lunch, we'd talk about all the NBA games the night before, and then we'd talk about Star Trek and Star Wars and, you know, talk about Lord of the Rings. Like,
dude, I mean, I consider that, like, I was part of the cool kids, you know, East High School, ruling Salt Lake. But, like, me and my friends, like, we're also, like, the biggest nerds you have ever met. Like, I can quote every single word of every single Lord of the Rings, and I'm not ashamed of it.
Yeah. No, dude, that's the way life should be, you know? I never really bought into focusing, like, too much on making sure everyone liked me. You know, exactly. That's one of my favorite lines in Wayne's World, is when, you know, Wayne and Garth are talking about how some people hate their show, and Garth, like, feels bad. And Wayne, he's like, not even Zeppelin wrote tunes that everyone loved. They left that to the Bee Gees. You know, like, I'm fine being Zeppelin, you know? I don't need to write tunes that everyone likes, you know what I'm saying?
Well, I mean, anyone with a pulse would be fine being Zeppelin. Have you ever heard a Fool in the Rain by Zeppelin?
I haven't.
Are you a Zeppelin guy? You like lead? You like a little lead?
I mean, admittedly, I'm like a Zeppelin's greatest hits kind of guy. You know what I'm saying?
Same.
I can sing along with the greatest hits. You know, I know a few of their tracks on the guitar a little bit. But I'm not a deep cuts kind of Zeppelin guy.
Well, when you get some time tonight, you should listen to Fool in the Rain. It's my father's favorite song. What about the Foo Fighters? You like the Foo Fighters?
Kind of the same thing. Like, I'd know.
What the hell?
Dude, I'd know half the stuff on their greatest hits, but, you know, like, deep cuts are not my thing. Actually, fun fact, though. My freshman year of college, my music class, we, instead of a final, I made a band out of people in there, and we performed Everlong by the Foo Fighters for the whole class. The final.
Oh my gosh, that song!
I sang and played the guitar in a 5-piece band. It was pretty dope.
Bro, when I hear that song, I float away to a special place. Like,
yeah, dude.
I feel like nothing can stop me.
Yeah, no, it's a great song. It's an all-timer, dude. It's one of the best songs to ever come out of the, you know, that, like, 90s alternative movement.
Oh. Yeah. Yeah.
Anyways, our second guest is ready, so we can stop boring people.
They're not bored. They love us.
Actually, before we call him in, I'm going to take a quick bathroom break. I got to pee. So
I have to entertain the guests?
Well, no, I'm just going to edit this out, but let's just pause for a second. Well,
I'm
not going
to keep talking just for fun.
You can keep talking and then I'll listen to it and I'll see if I should what I should leave in or cut out. But go ahead. Just Ramblings of Marsh, episode 1.
Now that the pressure's on me, I'm much more of like an improv kind of a guy, you know? I just say what's on my mind. But when I'm on stage and I stick to a script, I'm not a script guy. Guys who's listening, I'm not a script guy, you know? You can't tell me what to do. I just kind of go. I'm like a bird. I'm like Mark Wahlberg in The Other Guys. I'm a bird. I'm a peacock. You got to let me fly. With all this free time I have on my hand, you guys don't realize, because I'm such a freaking idiot on Twitter, I'm a hell of an athlete. Like, I'm the greatest rebounder ever to come through the earth. Like, oh, yeah, you heard that. You better beat that. I was going something. I was just saying people don't think I'm an athlete. I am an athlete. I have a great arm.
I believe it, man. What sports did you play growing up? You there, Marsh?
Yeah.
What sports did you play growing up?
Football was my first love. I mean, yeah. I had the greatest hands you have ever seen.
Yeah.
Like, I could catch anything. I could have started next to Lance Leggett and Darnell Jenkins for the Canes. I was in seventh grade. I was very fast too. I was very fast. And then I was good at basketball. I was an incredible rebounder. But I also wore glasses growing up, so that didn't really help me.
Yeah.
And then baseball, I kind of sucked because it was really boring.
I've always kind of been built more like a lineman rather than a skill position player. But I've always had good hands and then a cannon too. Like, dude, in baseball, I feel like I like was a little ahead of the curve in terms of physical maturity as a kid. You know, I was always throwing a special kind of heat in baseball that not really anyone could hit. But yeah. I'm not a good baseball player. I just throw hard. So like I couldn't get on base, I couldn't hit. And so, you know, by the time I was 14, like, that just caught up with me, and I had to quit. But, yeah, man.
Yeah. I mean, I just realized that, like, I wasn't good enough to go play, like, college or something like that. So I just started – I stopped lifting my legs. I just started doing my arms, and I looked like a fraternity god.
I always struggled with my conditioning in high school. I've always been a little bit pudgy. But, man, dude, in high school, I was just automatic from the three-point line. I was like the
exact opposite. I couldn't hit a three if you were offering me $100,000. But you put me down low, dude. I'd start throwing bows. I was like a Bill Laimbeer. I'm not an offensive player. But I will get you 15 rebounds and 4 blocks and 6 fouls. I'll foul out.
Yeah, I think most people expect me to be a little bit of a banger because I got like broad shoulders and, you know, I'm a bigger dude. And then, you know, just for like a pickup ball, I'm like 6'2", 6'1", 6'2". And so, you know, that's like one of the taller guys in any given pickup game, right? So people always expect me to kind of bang down low, but I'd always catch them off guard I'd get the very first inbound pass and then just like slowly walk it up the court and then stop like 5 feet short of the 3-point line and then just drill one from long range. Just get a quick 3 points, you know.
You want to hear what kind of player I was before we get to our guest?
Yeah, let's do it.
Great story. So we were playing travel ball in Salt Lake City. I think it was like my freshman year, or we were playing a tournament for East. And I don't know why I was just like really pissed. Like I felt like doing something like just like I wanted to be a badass. And so like it's like we're killing this team. And like it's the beginning of the end of the third quarter. And I get the ball down low. And I start wailing my elbows on a kid. This kid is guarding me, is probably like 5'3". And I'm elbowing him like I'm gunning for his life. And the ref just says, "Asshole, get out of here. You're out. You're ejected." And my basketball career at East High did not last much longer after that.
I love it.
That was I'm a defensive guy. You know, I'm a team guy. You know, yeah, I'm like a football guy.
Yeah. It's like, what was that dude that played for the Celtics and then he played for the Grizzlies? Tony Allen? Some Tony Allen act.
Larry Bird.
Yeah, that guy too. It's very Larry Bird-esque.
I'm Larry Bird without the jump shot.
All right, I'm gonna patch it, Justin. Let's see.
Let's do it. Let's talk some more football.
Justin, you're on Fours Up, man. How are you?
All right, how you doing?
Justin, it's Marsh. How the hell are you?
What's up, man? Quarantining the best I can.
Hey, we are very Iron Man football. We got Justin. He's from the State of U. He's a fellow State of the U guy, just like me. And funny, I mean, it's funny because Justin and I, we tweet at each other almost daily about football because we're both just football freaks. But this is the first time we've ever like talked. Isn't that kind of
first time I've heard your accent? Yeah.
Yeah. How do I sound? Do I sound like a football guy?
You sound like a Midwesterner. Yeah. So those are all football guys or ice hockey. Yeah. Or both, I guess.
Hey, that's the best compliment I've received a lot. So let's talk some football, bro.
Hey man.
How are you dealing with no sports right now?
Well, that's a great question. So I was used to working, you know, probably getting to work, I guess, at 6:30 or 45 and then not getting home a couple days a week until, you know, 6 o'clock or something like that. So to have nothing to do at all is like such a drastic change. We even work out on Saturday morning. So, you know, everything about what I've been doing the last, you know, almost 20 years completely hit like a stop button. So that's pretty nuts. You know, biggest hope is that it'll ever come back. But, you know, I honestly couldn't tell you the answer on that. So lately, man, just been watching some old games.
Okay. What's been your favorite offense that you've seen over the past week?
Oh, God, definitely not Butch Davis's 1995 offense.
Your tweets during that game were horrible.
That could bore you to tears. Let's see, of what I've seen, I mean, I was a really big fan of what the Houston Roughnecks were doing in the XFL. So I've watched a little bit more of that recently. But then, you know, I mean, if you watch that SMU Temple game, you don't like what Lashley was doing, you're crazy. You know, what is your complaint? He scores too much. So that's definitely up there with those two.
Cool. Well, I'm glad that our guy Lashley's in there. I have a question, and no worries if the answer is no, but have you gotten a chance to watch what Rhett Lashley was doing at UConn?
So that's my thing to do this week. I have to keep myself busy doing something.
Yeah.
And so my goal to not lose my mind by, you know, not working is I was going to watch the UConn game at Boston College, the full game on YouTube. So I was going to check that out this week. And watch, you know, sort of the demise of the 92 team as well. So watch the opener is against Iowa and the closer was against Alabama, obviously, in the Sugar Bowl. That was my two, like, big projects to get through. I was talking to Marsh about, you know, I'm finishing up Gridiron Genius by Michael Lombardi, and that's really good.
Okay. Yeah, so, I mean, maybe you can help me with my question anyways, but – so I wanted to kind of juxtapose what Lashley was, you know, was doing at Auburn and UConn when he had much more of, like, I guess he had singularly the power spread influence in his offense, as opposed to what he was doing at SMU when he started to get more familiar with the air raid concepts from Sonny Dykes. I mean, I'm not like you or like Roman, you know, where I just, this stuff makes sense to me. But, you know, could you talk about that a little bit and what you're expecting? I mean, are you expecting to see some of that air raid stuff, or are we looking at, you know, a majority like power option run heavy stuff?
I think what he was doing at SMU is closer to what he will become, with the flavoring of what they were doing at Auburn here or there. I don't see, even with King, I don't see them going wholesale like Nick Marshall.
Okay.
You know, we're basically like an option team in the shotgun. I mean, that was like, you know, taking a cornerback and making him a quarterback stuff. I mean, you have a real, like, actual quarterback who can throw the ball. I think he'd prefer to probably run the quarterback more than Bouchel was able to do. But you can see how good he is at adapting and adjusting to what he has. You know, one of the big conversation points I have with almost anyone is that you can't wholesale change crap just to do it, but you can adapt to what you've got. And if you've got a guy like King, well, yeah, you're going to run him a little bit more. So some of the stuff that you can see even where Bouchel ran, I think you're going to see King run a little more often. So less what I would call base zone where you block the backside in and more zone read where you may not, you know, the run pass option portion might happen pre-snap as opposed to post. It could happen downfield post-snap, but that's where you start getting a little more tricky and are guys downfield and are you going to get called for it? And I don't know what the hell the reps are doing right now, but probably they have to wait to ruin the game.
Okay. Okay. Let me ask you this, my friend. It's September 4th. You are Rhett Lashley. You have Temple week one the next day. Who is your starting five offensive lineman?
Oh, shit. I'm assuming they were about to figure that answer out. It sounded like, what do they have? They had Campbell, Clark, Gaynor, Scaife, and Zion were all out there. I think they were figuring that out. And, you know, obviously this whole thing went down and, you know, as a joke, you know, obviously ruined spring football for us nerds, but, you know, and the whole scale thing has really just kind of screwed the whole place up. But, you know, I think they were leaning towards that. I mean, the true test is going to be, you know, are these guys able to even stay remotely in shape? The problem for guys that are built like linemen, and some of them are, they put so much weight on. Like, look at Mario Cristobal. Obviously, I doubt he weighs close to 300 pounds anymore. So you think of a guy like him who's slimmed way down, or like Mark Swearith, you know, gosh, who was the tackle that was at Kansas City that like retired and just shrunk? You know, there's guys who eat, you know, like Michael Phelps style, 5,000, 6,000 calories a day, excuse me, just to get bigger. And then you have the guys who are more like a Donaldson or, you know, myself, where if you stopped working out, you'd be like 400 pounds. The difference 6'5", 5'10", you know.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on Donaldson?
I love being this guy. I think I was right all along. Anytime that you show up, and I think that Gridiron Genius sort of backs up my statement, they love to recruit their, you know, not recruit, but they love to scout their guys for the NFL at the Senior Bowl type stuff when it's best on best. And I think when he went to that All-American game stuff and he was getting worked every rep, you know, at tackle, I kept saying, you know, if you're getting worked this bad, you know, against other high school, imagine what's going to happen when you're going against 23-year-old men.
Yeah.
You know, 22-year-olds, 21-year-olds, you know, this is 18 on 18. Just wait until it's 23 on 18. He ain't going to be starting to tackle very long unless he loses 50 pounds and, can't, you know, you can't lean on Chase Young. You can't lean on, you know, the kid from Temple, Miami just got, you're not leaning on them. They're slipping right off you and going to Rousseau. You're not leaning on him. So it becomes very different. You know, those guys make their bread and butter in high school beating up people that were my size, right? They're blocking defensive ends who are 5'11 and 5'10 and, you know, 200 pounds. They're not always going up against someone that's also going to be in the ACC. Once you get to that All-Star game, you are. I mean, that's the top 100 players in the country. So now it's everyone is going P5. And I think that shows your true test. You know, people were saying, oh, well, nobody tries that hard. Okay, well, you have to do that. That's a two-way street. The defensive end isn't trying very hard. It's just smoking your ass. Well,
yeah.
I mean, both of you are either giving no effort and he's kicking your ass, or maybe you should try harder, or I don't know what to tell you, but if you go onto a display of your abilities and you don't have the competitive edge to want to kick the best defensive end in the country's butt every rep, then I don't have a spot for you on my roster because you don't have competitive winning edge.
I know you were very pissed off about the 2019 season. Well, we all were. But, I mean, you're continuing to hold that grudge. Are you over the 2019 season?
I'm pissed off at my own 2019 season that I coached. So maybe I'm just angry. maybe I just had a bad 2019, damn it, but football-wise. But I'm mad about my own coaching job, so I don't want to make it sound like I'm some, you know, jackleg sitting in a, you know, armchair quarterbacking through, well, he's a bad coach. So was I. I was a bad coach last year. You know, we could have won two or three more games. And, you know, there was, I was on a drive that started from our own, you know, negative one. We were going 99 yards and we came up 3 yards short. I mean, there was stuff like that where I thought, God, you know, if we can drive 99 yards to beat our rival at homecoming with my parents there, well, that's going to be a big deal, you know? And we came up 3 yards short, you know, tried to double screen it and it didn't work. It wasn't the guy that normally does it. He was out, and, you know, stuff like that. But that's a bad coaching call. You know, the be all and end all of the whole thing is that anyone that says the head coach isn't at fault for losing, or that the offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, isn't at fault for their scheme, the truth is they are, and that you can't blame the players. You acquired them, developed them, and deployed them. That's on you. So, you know, do I think that that was a god-awful season? Yeah. Do I think you can learn and redeem yourself? I guess. I think, you know, if anything showed, it took Butch Davis like 5 years, and it didn't help sanctions and stuff. But that 95 team, after watching those, you know, couple of games and stuff, I mean, you're looking at future NFL All-Pros, and they're losing to UCLA, who went like, you know, had 5 wins or something that season. Like, you know, you shouldn't lose to FIU. You shouldn't get smoked by Louisiana Tech. Now, Louisiana Tech strength coach, I love him. Kurt Esser's my guy. But even Kurt will tell you, they took a bunch of one stars and beat Miami, and they thought it was hilarious.
And let me ask you this. Sorry, Justin, I keep going over you. But you, I mean, you, Justin, you know the game of football. You've been coaching here for, I mean, I don't know how long you've been coaching. It seems like you're 100 years old. But how long does it take to build a winning or a good culture on a football team?
It takes Urban Meyer one season to build a winning culture somehow. How the hell does he do that? But it takes the rest of us. But then he sort of dissipates, right? Like,
but what does he do differently?
Motherfucks the shit out of everybody. Knows how to. He does. And he knows how to bring in. He has no scruples. He knows how to bring in a recruiting class that is nobody's business. But it always starts to wane, right? Like, he's always best in the first couple of years. And then it, like, trails off a little bit. And he loses some of that power. Well, you lose your trust, accountability, and respect to have a longstanding success when you allow people to break rules you don't allow other people to. You know, if you read, there's a book called The Program, and it's actually an entire company, I guess you could say, that goes out and does leadership stuff from the military to college football programs. NC State and Georgia Tech just used it. You know, they've been in NBA teams. They've been with, you know, NFL teams. They go to major corporations. You know, they're former Marines, and they come in and teach you how to establish leadership. But I mean, they're going to tell you the same thing. Like, you can be successful for a couple of years with that core value, that goal, but, you know, culture beats talent when it comes down to Clemson against other schools that allow a bunch of hokey shit. I think, you know, the thing that Dabo does best, this is a massive tangent, but I didn't think Dabo does best is that he was willing to get 15th ranked recruiting classes to get the guys that he wanted that were going to follow the rules. And then got number 1, 2, 3 recruiting class. And they still don't get usually number one, right? And Georgia kind of usurped them every time. But they still get top 3, top 5. And now they're getting really good kids. And they can take a risk on a guy or two because 100 people in their locker room are upstanding citizens. You can take 1 or 2 risks. But you can't start off taking all those risks and expect to maintain. So Meyer goes out and gets all these top-flight players. They win immediately. That helps boost your recruiting. He doesn't follow a lot of standards that he preaches, but then, you know, it always starts to deteriorate under him. I think we saw it happen with Bob Stoops. I think, you know, if you're willing to sacrifice your core values, you're never going to have sustained success in one place. Can you bounce around and, you know, jump from Utah to Florida to Ohio State to wherever the hell he goes next? Sure. But can you stay at Ohio State for 15 years? No, because you're going to wear it. You're welcome. And the kids stop believing you. They don't have trust in you. They don't respect you for real anymore. Do they fear him because he, you know, MFs everybody? Sure. But do they actually respect and trust him in the end? I don't know. Or they wouldn't break all the damn rules.
Yeah.
Well, so how do you view like our current culture in that template? I mean, do you think the turnover chain and the touchdown rings, do you think all that stuff plays into this, or I mean, kind of give us an assessment on the program culture right now, if you would.
You know, for me, I think the best thing someone like Manny Diaz could have done was drop that kind of stuff immediately from becoming the head coach. Is that great stuff to do as a coordinator? Oh yeah. Like, you know, you've got to find in the Gridiron Genius book, he talks about how Belichick still uses t-shirts, like special forces, or I can't remember what they call it. I know they got special forces, and he still gives out t-shirts to millionaires. You know what I mean? Like, and they're fighting over t-shirts. Like, I want to be the special teams player of the week, and they get a leather jacket if you get the most. And guys want that jacket, right? But that has nothing to do with the shirt and the jacket. It has to do with they unbelievably respect and want Bill Belichick to love them, right? They want to be a Belichick guy. First of all, you're probably going to win. And second of all, you know, that sort of progresses you, obviously, in a coaching career, you know, into what a lot of guys feel like, I think, is sort of a successful life because of the discipline and toughness created there. So I think with Manny, if he had to do it all over again, he never would have rode the damn yacht. He would not have done the kegger thing. And he would probably drop some of the BS. That's all false bravado, and it's not real. There's nothing backing it up. You know, I think the Wisconsin coach was Paul Chris. I think he took a crap on the turnover chain in the Orange Bowl. And when he said turnover chain, you know, assholes or whatever he said, he basically shot it down. It was dead. It was dead right then. The minute that you lost to Wisconsin, the thing was over, right? Because they're sort of the litmus test for shitty coaches, because they pounded Randy Shannon to death. They beat Rick and sent him packing. It's like every time that you're done, they're kind of the one that, you know, they're not the last domino, but they flick it to get it started, and it goes around for another, you know, 12 months before you're canned.
Do you think Manny can be the guy, or is the guy, that can turn this thing around?
I think, honestly,
because I think he could be. I'm very skeptical, but yeah. Yeah, do you think he really is the guy?
I don't think he's the guy. Like, I don't think he's – there's very few national champion coaches, right? There's very few. Who's still active? Matt Brown. He's obviously the guy. What he's doing in North Carolina is unreal in the amount of time he's doing it in. You know, Brown is the guy, right? He seems to be reinvigorated, doing it through younger assistants, high-profile people. Or at least upcoming, with Phil Longo and Jay Bateman. You know, you have Dabo. You've got Nick Saban. Hell, is that it?
I mean, you got, Les Miles is okay. Kansas. And then you got Ed O as well.
Oh, yeah. God, that's dumb of me. Yeah. So, and Orgeron just got his first, right?
Yeah.
It's very few. You know, it took Ed Orgeron a long time. You know, he had his big season, or his big, you know, break with Ole Miss, failed miserably, and then traveled around for a long time, and eventually, you know, got the job that he did earn, and he did deserve to get a second chance, and LSU was smart, that paid off, and he's a guy that, in the vein of Manny, though, like Orgeron, they're not, you know, they're willing to admit they've made mistakes. I think that's the best thing about Manny Diaz. I think the thing that you can say, the things that I don't like are the false bravado, tackling the dummy. I think that was disrespectful to Mark Richt in a lot of ways. Obviously it backfired on him big time. A lot of that stupid hokey shit backfired on him quick. I think if he looks inward and he establishes those core values and he says, these are the three things I believe in, you know, you can put up a sign in your guidance counselor's office that says discipline, and, you know, it can have a nice picture of some waterfalls, but it doesn't mean shit if you as the leader are not disciplined, right? I mean, discipline is only from everything that you do is from the top down. Culture is created by the leader. And programs are a mirror of their head coach. Your head coach is late to shit and they throw a stupid kegger and they care more about flash than substance, then your kids will too. I mean, that's why they dance on the sideline during an FIU ass kicking, right? I mean, that came from your coach tackling a dummy and from stupid rings and a kegger and a yacht thing. And that's why the idiot dances on the sideline, right? So
I was in such a positive mood before this, and now you're like getting me pissed off at Manny.
Don't do that.
It is what it is. I mean, he can either learn from his mistakes that he made year one or keep falling, because he only has this year to prove himself.
There is this year. Yeah. I think he learned. And that's the thing I like about him. So if you said, what are the cons? I think he came in too flashy. He should have come in with his mouth shut, you know, like, shit, I'm glad to be here. And, like, I'm going to work my ass off quietly and sort of grind it out. Kind of like Orgeron, right? Like, Orgeron would be a great litmus test for, like, or a great role model in the sense of, like, man, he just kind of, like, does. He is him. He's authentic. He keeps his mouth shut as far as, like, there's no false bravado shit at Orgeron. There's just truth, right? He's very authentic. And I could follow. He's very servant leadership-based as far as that guy is willing to. I hate the idea that all these guys get up at 3 o'clock in the morning. I think it's stupid. I personally believe in 8 hours of sleep, and so does LeBron James. He believes in 10. But
calling me out right now?
If you don't sleep for a whole, like, another set of reasons. You just don't sleep. You don't wake up on purpose at 3 when you wish you could sleep till 7. My dad doesn't sleep either. Like, he wakes up. He only sleeps, like, an hour at a time. He's pulling the Kramer, right? But I think the thing that is really good about Manny is that he was willing to admit Dan Enos and the O-line coach didn't work. And I think he's willing to tweak things. You heard a lot less rings and stupid tackling. And there was a lot less, like, midnight hype madness. Like, none of that, like, NBA Jam garbage was going on anymore. I think he was like, oh, now it's business. You know, now we're back to business. Even in the transfer portal. He went after getting guys that weren't kicked out of somewhere else. They were graduating. They were academically excellent, right? And they were guys with good character. I've never heard – I'll tell you, Georgia Tech coaches wanted the defensive end to go there. He just chose Miami. They wanted him. So it's not like his old coaches didn't want him. Now, you can't say the same thing about the kid from Virginia Tech, right? And it's not – you know, King, they didn't want him out of there. He wanted out of there. And a lot of people wanted him. And Miami, you know, I don't believe in luck, but timing and preparation. But, you know, you're blessed to have him show up, right? So I think he's done a lot of good.
I actually haven't thought of that. Sorry to interrupt. Keep going.
No. I'm just saying, I think that's, to me, that is where things have changed. And he's making, you know, Martell had a bad reputation. I think he's made changes. His entire... He was looking at talent, and talent doesn't always make best. That's straight out of the program. They're going to be, you know, copyright infringing me left and right. But, you know, I think talent doesn't always make the best. That, you know, a friend of mine that's in coaching, you know, used to always use the wins above replacement. If you're a headache, right, are you even worth the damn win? And so was the Trayvon Hill kid, if he was a headache for Miami and for Virginia Tech, was he worth any wins with 2 or 3 sacks? Hell no. That ain't worth it. You know, like, shit, you could put anybody in there and do that. Hell, you know, Rudy got a sack, right? anybody can sort of pull, allegedly. I guess that might not be true. I have no idea. Can't remember. But, you know, allegedly. But LA stuck the damn, you know, that jabroni linebacker was in and he made a tackle, right? Like, I mean, almost anybody can get ran over once, right?
Yeah.
You know, I dropped a home run one time. My dad said, the ball caught you. You didn't catch the ball. anybody can, you know, have the ball catch them every once in a while, right? Yeah. I think the things that he's done that I have my positives to are replacing out, just getting rid of the guys that didn't work out with you, right? Like, I'm gonna bring in a new OC. I promised you something I didn't deliver on. Now I'm gonna deliver, right? They bought an offensive line coach that is a college offensive line coach, which is very different from NFL. And they brought in a new receivers coach to work the air raid because it's totally different than timing patterns, right? It's all option choice routes. So I think it was a good things to see. And I think seeing someone grow after 12 months is a really positive thing to note about them, that they are willing to grow, change, and accept responsibility. You know, one of the worst things I heard from Randy Shannon when I was watching the games from 2009 was at halftime he blamed Mark Whipple. Buddy, that's your fault.
God.
Anything Mark Whipple does is your fault. You hired his ass. So that's you. It's your fault. It all works top down. And so if you're not willing to accept all of the blame and give out all of the praise and just go, oh, thank God that he was here. God, I loved him. Then you're not a real leader. And that's why you're the defensive coordinator at UCF.
Yeah. You know, we had if you know Better Duck on Twitter, I mean, we've had him on a bunch. The first time we had him on, he compared Manny to Butch's early career. You know, and we asked him about what was going on. He's like, well, we already saw this. You know, you talked about how horrible that 95 team was under Butch. You know, he said Butch had to learn on the job. Like he was kind of Duck's not his exact words, but he makes it sound like he thought Butch was a pretty bad coach at first, but he had to learn these things. And honestly, that's kind of the thing keeping me in on Manny is what you just talked about, is the ability to self-assess, realize what you've done wrong, the mistakes that you're making, and then correct them and not make the mistake again. And for all the reasons you brought up, that's kind of what's keeping me optimistic. You know, I've talked a lot about it on this pod is, you know, last year it was all style, no substance, even the hires, right? It was the style points for stealing a guy from Bama, air quotes. yeah. You know, it was the hype from getting QB1 off the reality TV show, and no disrespect to Tate because I like him.
Yeah, watch what you say, bro.
I'm a huge Tate fan. But, you know, there is a difference in Tate and D'Eric in that, you know, Tate, there's a lot of hype around Tate. And if you watch his high school tape, there's good reason. Like, he was an electric athlete in high school. But D'Eric King has been an electric athlete on the college level. And so we know that he's capable of doing that because he's produced. And Rhett Lashley, he just put up the 7th best offense in college football. So he's produced now. It's not about style anymore. It's about substance. I mean, the substance is what gives you style, right? We talk about these old Canes. Sorry, I'm ranting here, but we talk about these old Canes teams where, you know, we're, you know, making big plays, running into the tunnel, dancing, getting, you know, penalty flags thrown for taunting and unsportsmanlike conduct. But, you know, that doesn't work if we're losing. It only works because we're showboating at how bad we just kicked your teeth in, you know, like it's the substance that creates the style. It's, you know, and I'm hoping that Manny learned that, like you said, he was all style, no substance last year. Hopefully it's style before substance now, or substance before style. So
what you said about the 95 season. So the funny thing about Butch Davis is, I don't think he adapted anywhere near as much in 5 years as Manny's done in one. Like, and we'll see if it, you know, really comes to fruition if we have a season and everything. But, you know, I think with Butch, it just became Jimmy's and Joe's outweighed their X's and O's, right? I mean, if you watch some of the stuff that they do, is they're getting gashed by the Jabbar kid, or even, you know, even with Syracuse was kind of tearing them apart for a half. They didn't make a lot of adjustments. Some of those guys just started playing a little better, you know, and it was hard for Syracuse to handle Daniel Ferguson, who is a, you know, is a family friend from many years ago. I haven't talked to him in years, but, you know, when I still lived down there, so 15 years ago, 20 years ago, he was a, you know, family friend. My dad and his mom used to work together in the Orange Bowl a lot. So, you know, I think he adapted it a little bit. Like, if you were watching the game against Syracuse, they ran power a lot less, and they're running stuff like stretch and letting him cut back because he was really a zone back, letting him run inside zone and stretch more. But, you know, they're still doing a lot of the same shit. It's just Ryan Clement was better than Ryan Collins. and I think even with the offensive line, like Casey Jones and guys getting injured, when you watch it, you're like, yeah, but you let – the thing that I like about the zone, this is a total tangent, but the thing I like about the zone is that you just have to stalemate blocks. Watch Clemson. You don't watch Clemson dominate blocks. Even when they double team someone to run duo, they just stalemate and the back squirts through and like just cuts off a guy and like gets 8 yards. But they don't have a dominant offensive line. Their offensive linemen don't make it in the NFL. They don't dominate. They just do enough. They like stalemate blocks. So anyway, with a bad offensive line, you can run zone and you can sort of just like kind of hold on to your guy and let the back do his work. That's his damn job. You know, you brought him in here to do his job. So you could see that they changed a little bit. But, you know, I thought with Butch Davis, his number one thing was wanting to run the Cowboys offense when you don't have Irvin, Novacek, Johnson, Smith, and Aikman, and Nate Newton and those guys, you know, Wisniewski and Newton. You don't have one of the greatest compiled teams. Yeah, and the Cowboys, you know, Jimmy Johnson, that was the best. He was the smartest guy in many ways, but in that way of saying, wow, there's no salary cap. There's all these draft picks, and they dumped Walker and got even more. I know all of these college football. You know, I wrote a thing about why Johnson's drafts were so successful at first many years ago, trying to sell it, and it didn't really work out so well for me. I think I got $50 for it. But, you know, how – like, I did a deep dive into it. Miami was playing a national schedule, and, you know, Jimmy Johnson was able to play Auburn, UCLA, LSU, Michigan, Notre Dame, Florida, Florida State, BYU. You know, they were playing, they were booking at least, if not playing, all these teams all over the damn country, right? Penn State, you know, they were getting everybody. And so in order, you know, in Oklahoma, whenever you get everybody like that, you also see their opponent take. So he was seeing a national schedule versus, let's say, you are an ACC coach. You're only getting the same teams over and over again. Being independent, playing a national schedule, they were actually seeing hundreds and hundreds of kids who wound up going on to the NFL, giving him this massive draft advantage, not to mention the free agency and salary cap weren't things yet when they first started that run. And so you've got all the guys you want. You could trade and stuff. You could cut people. And you can also draft, and the Walker deal was great. But a lot of it came from that national schedule and coming right from college and knowing who the best players. I mean, think about it. He had coached against Emmitt Smith, right? You know, he's there. He coached against Aikman. So a lot of that came from that. That's a total, you know, tangent. But Butch Davis wanted to run that offense without all those legends that we just talked about, without umpteen Hall of Famers, or at least guys that belong in the Hall of Fame, like a Darryl Johnson, who's, I don't know if he is or isn't, but he's vastly underrated if he's not. You know, they're able to do that. And then you look at the roster at Miami, and you're like, well, the line wasn't terrible. It just wasn't great. That's a Dennis Erickson thing. They weren't recruiting line at all. But mixed in with that, you know, are you really running the right scheme, as we talked about Dan Enos, to offset that? And so Butch and Enos almost seemed very similar, strange but true. When I'm watching that and thinking, God, we're just square peg round hole in this thing. You know, Daniel Ferguson's his own back. You're trying to run power. That UCLA game was very telling. And then he had bad clock management. They wasted timeouts all the time and stupid shit. But, you know, a lot of it was, you know, and that's, and to me, that's the sign of a good head coach. Penalties, clock management, and are you forcing things in because that's what you want to be right? Or are you doing things that actually do make you right?
Okay. I hear. Okay. That was a good point. Well, Justin, let me ask you two more questions before we get you the hell out of here. First one, give me one thing you love about De'Ara King and one thing you're skeptical about his game.
Yeah, there's a whole lot to love as far as when you are looking at an offensive line like that and somebody that can, you know, that can move the pocket. He's going to be able to scramble, which is a huge part of the game now, that I think if anyone looks and says, you know, well, the protection broke down, he had to run outside and he threw it downfield, that's everybody. Watch Burrow, watch Trevor Lawrence, you know, even Tua, you know, who obviously has bad ankles and a bad hip. Look at Mahomes, look at what Tom Brady did for a long time, Joe Montana for a long time, Steve Young. I mean, you can go all the way back. And you can go all the way back forward to, you know, back to Steve Young and Montana and those guys, and, you know, and then go back the other way and say, I like the fact that somebody can move around and make things happen and create plays. He doesn't turn the ball over a lot. He scores a lot of different ways. The only thing you might not like about him is he ain't very tall, but it didn't stop Kyler Murray. It didn't stop Baker Mayfield. You know, there are other Drew Brees. You know, he's a Super Bowl winner at 5'9", so it's not stopping a ton of guys. Now, does Drew Brees have an unbelievable amount of talent? Sure, but I think King has an unbelievable amount of talent as well. So, I mean, you know, maybe something you complain about is the level that he played at, You know, did he play at the highest level? No. But, you know, it's Houston. It's not like it's, you know, they're more like a, to me, they're more of a ACC than they're not. You know, I mean, I think Houston could jump, you know, into the ACC and be competitive. They could jump into shit, the Pac-12, and probably win. Other than, you know, Oregon's the only really talented team in the division.
Yeah, I'm not even going to rebuttal you and say Utah because I got nothing.
Well, Utah is always going to be playing above their means, right? You know, they get guys from Florida, but of course they're not the guys that Ohio State plucks. They're not the guys that Clemson plucks. They're not even the guys that Florida State and Florida get. They're the guys that
Miami drops.
Or maybe even guys that like used to go to, you know, West Virginia. Yeah. West Virginia used to take the South Florida kids all the time, or you know, something like that, and they wind up now at Utah. Well, yeah, Utah's winning games. I'd rather go there than somewhere ahead.
Yeah.
I feel like they're a solid program, but always just seem to choke in the big games, you know? I mean, I don't know.
Okay, last question for you, Justin. And I ask you this because you're a football guy, and I'm a football guy. Jordan's a football guy. You have a day to spend with three football coaches any time period. You just get to talk football with them. Could be Mike Ditka, Bill Walsh, anyone, college, you know, pro. You just chill and talk football with three coaches of your choice. Who are you picking?
Randy Shannon, Al Golden, and no, I'm just kidding.
All right, go to hell.
God, if I can get three in a room, they'd have to be fun. Would we have to talk about football, or we can talk about anything?
You could talk about football. You talk about life, but, you know, football's a part of life. I mean, you tie one into each other.
You know, the more you hear about, like, Saban and Belichick, the more that's all they talk about. I don't think that that would go over that well with me. I think that, you know, I would probably be able to have a good conversation with, like, Nick Rolovich. He seems like a really interesting guy. You know, he was at Hawaii. Now he's at Washington State. He seems really interesting. He brought the Britney Spears impersonator to the conference day, and he brought a palm reader. I am into that kind of thing. So I think Rolovich would be fun. You know, I know that's a more recent one. He would be really fun, though. I think, you know, I did this this kind of post thing once for, you know, where if I had a TV show, I would take different coaches out places. And I think the Mike Leach to IKEA would be fascinating. You know, like sitting in the fake kitchenette, making him eat a Swedish meatball and just asking him about anything. Like, you know, what do you think of this setup? So, you know, how would you build your kitchen? I think he could be pretty fun to do that with. So I think Mike Leach at IKEA would be my idea. I think Rolovich maybe at like, you know, you take Rolovich to like Casadega, Florida and have his palm read and some dump like that. And then, you know, gosh, you got a lot of interesting weirdos in that business, you know. Football's a weird place. Kurt Hester, for sure. I'd like to go gator hunting with Kurt Hester, the strength coach at Louisiana Tech. he'd be a fun guy to go out and, like, cut your sleeves off your shirt. And, you know, you used to have long hair. I have long hair.
He was rumored. Yeah, you know. He was rumored when we got Coach Feely. He was – I mean, I don't know if this is true or not. You might know, but – he was another rumored candidate here at Miami, so that would.
I wouldn't be blown away because, you know, I would be shocked, I guess, because of Baker being very friendly with Manny, obviously, and Manny having been there. He knows Kurt. I mean, if you know what you're doing, you want to bring Kurt Hester into your program. The thing is going to be taking a small-town guy like that who loves the Baton Rouge sort of area, you know, New Orleans. Like his wife from there, you know, they're just kind of like embedded in there. I read his book. I talked to him probably once a week. Like he's a really cool dude. It's going to be hard to pull him out of like the bayou, right? Yeah. Like he was at LSU and then now he's at Louisiana Tech. He ain't, you know, it's like one of those things. I'm sure he flirted with the idea, but you know, Louisiana Tech is most of his equipment. Like that's his actual personal like strength equipment from when he used to do combine prep. So he sort of invested there more deeply than anyone ever anywhere probably. So I don't, you know, I'm sure he thought about it and he strikes me as a guy who would definitely pick you up on it to be respectful. You know, but I think they got the right guy. I mean, I've never heard anything bad about Coach Feely. I've heard nothing but positive things that, you know, Georgia Tech was looking at him. Now the guy that they've got, I can't think of his name, it starts with a C, but he's an outstanding strength coach, but he was, you know, Feely was pick number two. So Georgia Tech was looking at him. They're doing great things at their program. He came down to Miami, and I mean, he was literally like Georgia Tech's, you know, if we don't get this guy, we want this guy, which is a good place to be. I mean, you know, you're at Temple. You should, you know, be flattered to have that kind of attention. You know, I think he was a good hire, and I think that'll go well. You know, remember, the strength coach only does what the head coach tells them in a lot of ways. Now, they obviously teach technique and things like that, but a lot of those coaches, when you see them running stupid 300-yard shuttles or 110s or whatever, that have nothing to do with football, because I've never ran 300 yards in a game, probably. hell, my fat ass probably didn't run 300 yards in a career. But I wouldn't exactly chase guys down for an angle tackle. But, you know, that's not real, right? And you can't create speed while tired. And, I mean, we could have a whole entire podcast about how to create speed. But you can't create speed while tired. So if you want guys to be faster and all this Miami speed, well, Miami's been the slowest damn team that I've seen in a long time. I mean, Miami is slow. They're, you know, all these Jeff Thomas rumors that he didn't do shit. I mean, he ever burn anybody, you know, like,
I think you're the first person to ever call Miami slow.
They're slow.
Yeah.
Watch them play.
Losing teams are slow.
And they lack power in the hits. They play high. They play tight. Look at the linebackers, high and tight. And they're slow. I mean, for every Russo that's there who they haven't, you know, that other staff didn't have time to make slower. I think he's got time, you know, right now he's still just working on nature, right? I mean, look how many guys came in as freshmen and better than they did as seniors. Or they came in as freshmen, played really well, and then all of a sudden they only played well their senior year, like a Leonard Hankerson, who like had a really good senior year, but you know, you're waiting for it for years, right?
Yeah.
And he started working with somebody else. Mark Duper was training him, right? So I think, you know, when you think about, there's a lot of, you know, I feel like this is, so this will take us all the way back home, right? Butch Davis, 1995. You're looking at this laundry list of injuries, right? And you're like, damn, ankle, knee, ankle, knee, ankle, knee, shoulder, shoulder, shoulder. That's the weight room. And that's practice reps. You have beaten the living shit out of guys when their shoulders are blown out. And you probably, you know, one rep max the hell out of them because you're creating toughness, brother. You don't create toughness. I'm sorry. People might disagree with me. Angela Duckworth, you know, this whole grit thing. She even says she's not even sure really how to judge it because you can game her test. You know, what's passion and perseverance and blah, blah, blah. Sure. I've read her book. I've read some Carol Dweck stuff. I don't think you create mental toughness. I think people either got it or they don't. Can you sort of have it, get a little more? Sure. But if you don't have it, you're just going to be a really, really good jogging quitter. And so I can jog your ass back and forth all day, and you can still quit on me. Or I can figure out who the hell's a quitter by talking to your high school counselors and by digging deeper into who you really are as a player and a student. I'm going to tell you now, if you quit on a damn test, you're going to quit on a damn football game. And so I don't think that you create toughness by running 300s. You just jog anyway. No one gives a shit. You're telling me that the star player isn't going to play because they didn't pass the test. Only Pat Riley does crazy shit like that. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's – how many rings does he have? Like 9 rings, Pat Riley? Or
the Godfather.
Yeah.
Crazy enough to do it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Antoine Walker ran his ass out of town.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't create stuff.
The most recent Jimmy Butler podcast, he was on the JJ Redick show, and he actually talks about that. You know, he's like, it'll never be completely equal for guys like me as opposed to guys like Duncan Robinson. But he's like, more so than any other NBA franchise I've ever been with, he says, you know, we're all peers here. You know, even me is the max player that they gave up assets for, and you know, guys like Duncan Robinson and Tyler Hero and you know, the other young guys.
And think about Tom Brady still slept in the team hotel on a lumpy damn Hyatt mattress with his supermodel wife right down the street the night before a game, just like the jabroni free agent scout team player and everybody else.
Yeah.
Love it.
And that's how you win.
Yep.
That's my kind of guy. I love it.
There's stories about like that type of stuff with Greg Popovich and the Spurs too. With you know, I heard a story that, oh man, I think it was, you know, that for their very early what's that called, training camp, you know, like the very first weekend of training camp, they're doing all kinds of special stuff to kind of, you know, just push the new guys right into the thick of things. And they had to stay in a team hotel and stuff, and they were meeting in the ballroom. And I think it was like Bruce Bowen and Steven Jackson or something are, you know, they parked in the parking garage. They're coming in and they see Tim Duncan get off the elevator in the hotel there. And, you know, it's just like some random hotel. It's not a luxury place.
Yeah.
And, you know, and they're like, Tim, where are you coming from? And he's like, oh, my room. I'm up, you know, up on the fourth floor or whatever. Like, Tim, you don't have to stay in this crappy hotel. Like, we're all staying in our million-dollar houses, you know. And I don't know. I thought it was funny, you know. It really shows that, you know, when you can get star players to buy into stuff like that, that's when you create dynasties and have the prolonged success.
When you have guys that are we guys, not me guys.
Yes.
That's all I want. I just want team guys. I don't want these prima donnas. I just want football guys that are all about winning and winning for the team. Why is it so damn hard to find?
Because here's a couple things. It's hard to find because you have to have a recruiting department that knows what the hell they're looking for. Because when all you do is hire former high school security guards who became head coaches who now work at your school and don't have a goddamn master's degree in anything, let alone psychology, how are you able to figure out that that's what you're looking for? All they know is stupid shit like, you know, oh, yeah, he's a tough guy, bruh. Like, no, that's not real. None of that matters. You know, sure, you know his uncle who you've paid $1,000 to be able to get in the door with him. Like, I get it. You have to have some scumbag who's doing the bag, but, you know, to compete. But you also need somebody who's overseeing all the bag men and your bag coaches who are the guys who are the runners for all that stuff. And you have to get in the middle of it. And so you have to have somebody that's overseeing that who is your director of player personnel, who's not a former South Miami, you know, field maintenance asshole or whatever, that actually is a real person that's actually studied organizational psychology, or a former school administrator, anything, right, that understands what admissions is looking for, what a transcript looks like, that when you see six high schools and one of them's name, I don't remember if this is Miami or Jacksonville, but like Bannerman, and you start looking at them, you're like, oh, that's the expulsion school. Correct. Okay. You know what I mean? You start seeing that kind of stuff. And you go, oh, you never actually went to said high school. You went to the damn tech school that works on carburetors down the street. That's why we can't get you to pass the fucking ACT. Well, yeah, no shit. You know, like, you have to have somebody who knows those things, who can sit across a room from somebody and knows that the kid dicking around on their phone during your, you know, what's basically the biggest job interview of their life up to that point means they don't give a shit. You have to be able to tell. And until you hire someone that understands organizational psychology, you will never, ever look through somebody's eyes and peer right into what the hell matters to them most. Because all you're doing is trying to get their uncle's friend on your goddamn coaching staff at some fake-ass job, and it doesn't matter. Yeah. Because you need an overarching, overseeing person who can read a transcript, who can stare into somebody's eyes, and who knows when they're being put on. And that's why these guys play Miami for a vacation and then go to Alabama, or they go to Auburn, or they go wherever the fuck, but they don't go to Miami because they never were. But you have to know that by looking into their eyes and seeing who's a damn phony and who's not. And until you can do that personally, you will never, ever build a great culture. I can run you up some stupid hill all day long, and you're either a quitter or you're not. But I didn't create it. It was just aesthetic.
I mean, you're preaching to the choir, man. This is what Jordan and I have been saying for the past two and a half months. Like,
yeah.
Well, hire an organizational psychologist, pay him well, call him the director of player personnel or whatever the hell, and have them investigate and evaluate these kids that you want. And they're kids. Let's face it, they're kids. And let's look into them. They should be considered grown men, But our culture here in the United States is all fucked up, and you're not a grown man, so you're like 26 years old. But
didn't Butch Davis hire a psychiatrist when he got to Miami?
He used some kind of psychologist, yeah, and I think Pete Garcia's background could be in that, some form of organizational psychology possibly. I know Jimmy Johnson was big on it. Jimmy Johnson used to give the Minneapolis personality test thing, where it was like, do you like to go to parties? Is very true, very false. That test, you know, we've all done one of those somewhere in high school or college.
Yeah.
And, you know, or they've asked you to job interview. And I think Jimmy Johnson used to give that, and he used to give that in the NFL, and then they made it, you know, against the rules. You're not allowed to give that test today. There is one that they are allowed to give. And I'm not sure if they're allowed to give it, though, until you're hired. Like, there's a lot of stuff with giving a personality test before you're actually, like, drafted and hired. Which I think is stupid. I think you should be able to do that outright as long as a psychologist is providing it. Now, should I be able to just walk in and give one? No. But should a psychologist? Yeah, I think you should be able to hire a psychologist who does a personality inventory test. I want to know if I've got a guy that's a born leader or isn't. I want to know if I've got somebody that's a sociopath, who's a known liar. I'd say you weed out the Aaron Hernandezes and get them out of here before they ever do any of this shit.
Yeah.
Helen Winslow Jr. was jacking off in the locker room in front of people. He chose food store. So culture is only what you are allowed to do. And if you don't think he did that at Miami and that they just let him get away with it, Larry Coker was like, oh, golly gee, and just let him get away with it, I'm sure he was doing it there too.
What did he say to the reporters? I'm a damn soldier?
He was using his soldier quite a bit.
Yeah, we okay.
They probably had some intern stand in front of him with a towel or something.
Yeah.
Hey, Justin, man, it was awesome having you on. You definitely have to come on again. Just good times talking football, bro. Thanks again, bro.
Yeah, man, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, man. Go Canes.
Y'all have a good night.
Man,
it's good stuff,
that,
man.
Last Kellen Winslow line killed me.
Dude, we went way over time on that one, but it was worth it. I think we had him on for like 40 minutes, 45 minutes maybe.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Yeah, Justin's fun. He knows the stuff.
He does. That was
I'm glad we don't interview idiots.
Yeah. Dude, we've really had good luck, you know, because it's not, I mean, for the listeners out there, we don't really have a strict screening process. You know, we've kind of just been like, hey, you seem cool, come on our show. And that could go horribly in so many ways.
If we had a screening process, I wouldn't even be able to host this darn thing.
Well, we started a screening process, and actually, Marsh isn't coming on the show ever again. So, no, I'm just kidding.
He's locked up in the Utah State Prison.
All right, so Tito is ready for us, brother.
I don't know how to pronounce his last name, so I'm just going to call him Tito.
Okay, yeah, I don't know either. So, I think it's Banach, but I don't know.
Banach, maybe?
Yeah, we'll ask him.
I should have, like, YouTubed a clip of his name, and maybe it would come up.
All right, where did I... How do I do this? There it is. Okay. I'm going to patch Tito in right now. Tito, how you doing, man? You are live on the Fours Up podcast.
Oh, what's going on, guys? What's up?
Tito, it's Marsh. Thanks for coming on, brother.
No problem, man. Glad to be on.
Good deal. So we now welcome on. How do you pronounce your last name, by the way?
Banach.
All right. We now welcome on Tito Banach. He is formerly with 560 WQAM in Miami. How long were you with those guys?
For about a year and a half.
Okay. So you were around the UM football program then pretty frequently.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'd go down. I'd be at the practices.
Okay. And Tito, have you always been, we've talked a little bit on Twitter, but I mean, I don't know too much. Are you from South Florida? Have you always been a Canes
fan? Yeah, born and raised, man. Yeah, born and raised, raised a Canes fan. Went to USF just because I got the scholarship money there. But no, born and raised a Canes fan, and been rooting for them ever since I was a kid.
Okay. Okay. So, God willing, a football season, you know, there will be a football season this year. How are you feeling about our Hurricanes in 2020?
Oh man, it's such a tough question. I feel like it's really such a tough question. But I feel like, you know, we say this every single year in the off season, but like when I look at the schedule now and I look at the talent on the team, I cannot help myself but think like it has to be like around 9 wins. Like it has to be a 9 win or above team. And I think I would be happy with 8, and I know that I say that and that may drive some people upset, but like I think if they win 9 and at least they just have to get to the championship game. They just have to. That's the most important thing to me. They got to win the Coastal, cuz I just think anything else at that point is disappointing.
Okay, because I'm glad you said 9 wins, because I'm predicting 9 wins. And when you started saying about the schedule, I'm like, oh, God, this is sounding like every single Canes fan since 2008. And you're just like, oh, with the schedule, I thought you were going to say like 11-1.
No. I think we always have this perception that like the talent should always win out. And granted, I do think Miami has talent, but like I just think the world of college football is too crazy to be a fan expecting 10 plus wins every single year. I think we've seen even the greats fall off like that. But I mean, for Miami's sake, I think what helps is, you know, there's just the teams around them in the Coastal are just really outside of maybe Virginia Tech. And I don't know who else. I feel like I'm scratching the bottom of the barrel.
UNC will probably be
UNC, right? That's a good point. Yeah, UNC is probably they seem like probably the national favorite just because of their QB, Sam Powell, right?
Yeah, Sam Howell.
Yeah, Sam Powell. So I think the national perspective is that they'll probably be the favorite to win the Coastal this year with Mac Brown. But I just think if the defense stays where it was at, and I do think that, yeah, there's been talk about how Miami's linebackers could be more fit for the offense than I guess Pinckney and Quarterman were. While I don't think the lineback play will get better, now that we have some guys who are a little bit more athletic,
I think it'll be different.
It'll definitely be different. We'll see a lot more, you know, that striker look that we like to see, where our defense is pretty versatile, but I have a hard time seeing more than 4 losses on the schedule. And I think anything else is an indictment on the coaching staff at that point.
I hear you. Let me ask you this. I'm backtracking a little bit. What year, what season were you with 560? What year were you there for?
2017, when the second year of Rick, when he went off, when he went to the Orange Bowl.
Compare that season to 2019.
Oof, Jesus Christ.
Because, I mean, you were around the program during, you know, the best season since 2003. And then we just came off this year where we went 6-7. What was the difference like? What was the feeling around Coral Gables and the University of Miami in 2017?
The buzz was completely different. I mean, entering 2017, I think what we still have and what everyone kind of looks to continuously identify this team as is a defensive beast. You know, I think at that point we were talking about guys like Jaquan Johnson. We were in just the second year of Quarterman and McLeod and Pickney, and that defensive line has an incredible amount of players, guys who are going to be in the NFL. I think the difference honestly is now Miami moving to this, you know, Rhett Lashley spread up tempo offense, and people have been calling for it for a while. I think, you know, with Rick, it kind of felt like he had a traditional pro spread offense or spread read option offense that wasn't up tempo, and the play calling was pretty generic for that standpoint. I think 2019 was just the hope that Enos could ascend this offense to new heights with the same personnel. You know, I think that was somewhat of an issue. I thought, you know, the hype around a lot of the hype was around Tate Martell. and that the defense would stay where it was at. But I mean, it's just it's crazy to think that 3 years ago we were you know, coming off of the Orange Bowl, and now we've kind of entered and back into a little bit of just wallowing in mediocrity. But I mean, it's going to be interesting. I think Lashley has the potential to kind of fix some of the issues that we've seen from the offensive side.
So I have a question for you, Tito. Being around the team and the program in 2017, did you get – I mean, how close were you to, like, the cultural inner workings of the program? I'm really curious is, like, the personality of the program and how some of those moving parts were working. Like, did you get to see, I mean, interaction between coaches and players, administrators, and, you know, how we were dealing with personalities and that type of stuff?
I was probably I wouldn't say I was that close. I'd probably say I was a little bit farther from that, in the sense of, you know, seeing coaches and players at practice, coming off the field, yeah, occasional practice viewing sessions. And I feel like there was a lot of structure with Rick. And I think that one thing that Rick doesn't get enough credit for was he definitely improved the culture at Miami. I think, you know, during the golden years, there was guys who kind of just had that clock in, clock out mentality, and it hit a real low point during the golden years, and I can confirm that through stories and things that I've heard. But I think for the most part, you know, Rick did establish a culture of, you know, guys who want to play football, who want to be out there, and getting the program back to the right level of maturity. I think in 2019, we kind of saw, you know, some mishaps with, you know, the locker room and things that happened with, you know, Jaren Williams and, you know, numerous other players. Jeff Thomas, obviously, is the kind of name that comes to mind. But, I mean, I would say I think the biggest thing that Rick doesn't get enough credit for was he kind of improved the image of what Miami football was, not only inside the locker room, but from outside.
Yeah. I mean, I don't really believe that 2017 team or even the 2016 team, which was also pretty successful, besides the 4-game losing streak, I don't really believe that those rosters were that much more talented than, you know, other teams we've had in the last 20 years. I think there's a few times that we've had a similar collection of talent. I mean, maybe I'm wrong, and hopefully you can shed some light on this, but I'm more of a believer that it was, you know, Rick's structure and the culture, like what you're talking about, that kind of willed us to that. I mean, what did we go on, like a 15, 16 game winning streak or something like that? You know, I'm with you. I don't think he gets enough credit in that. I mean, our program at many points in the last 20 years has kind of been a turd, and I feel like he kind of gold plated the turd for 2 years. And then kind of got, you know, then we kind of saw the turd resurface his last season.
Yeah, I you're right. I think you're right in that aspect. I think to view the Rick hire in a sense of like a 2-year plan was we needed to get back to recruiting well-find athletes at Miami. I think there was a point there. I mean, they got worse as the years went on, but during the golden years, and that he was just taking kids purely from their camp performance and not, like, you know, reviewing highlight tapes, talking with coaches, and ignoring, you know, guys who perform when the lights are on Friday night, as compared to just taking a kid who has a very good camp. There's a number of names that could go into that category, but I think he did that. And I think, like you said, from a structural standpoint, like I think Miami has always had this, like, this, you know, stereotypical image of being a dominant defense. And I think under Rick, we got back to that. And I don't know if, you know, if this last year was a drop off because Manny's no longer calling the players, although he has his hands on involved in that process from what I understand. But I think the saving glory of what Rick did was he got some, he had some pretty solid recruiting classes while he was at Miami, and he landed some guys that are even still here to this point that are still proving to be successful football players. I think DJ Dallas, obviously he was only here 3 years, but in his 3 years at Miami, he played a lot of football and he showed how capable he was. And that was one of Rick's signature victories while at Miami. So as far as, are those teams really that good? I do think at times 2017 was a little bit of lightning in a bottle. The number
we got lucky a few times.
Yeah, and I think that's college football in general. I mean, yeah. The number of times Auburn has made a national championship off of legitimately some insane bounces are like based off of getting lucky, and I think that's a part of it. So we'll see, man. I do think though, in looking back on it, I do think that those years are pretty funny to look at now in a different perspective in hindsight.
Okay. And I'm going to go kind of off course here because I just want to talk about fun things because we always talk about this dwindling culture at Miami. And it, I mean, I talk about it more than anyone. I've written about 35 articles on it. Give me your, since you become a fan, give me your five favorite Hurricanes from your lifetime, Tito.
Ooh, okay. That's a good question. All right. So I'll go number five. This is a weird one, but he was like one of the first players I remember when I went to the Orange Bowl. Number five would be Calais Campbell. I was always a big fan of him when he was at Miami. He was a stud. Number four, I'd probably go Jonathan Vilma. Fellow ESPNer and one of the greatest linebackers you've ever had in program history. Number three would be Devin Hester.
Mm-hmm.
He was literally the first UM football player I ever learned about because he was a stud. Yeah.
That's when I was like in fifth grade at the Orange Bowl watching Hester.
Exactly. Yeah. My first game ever, ironically, I've never shared this story, but my first ever UM football game was University of Miami against USF in 2005.
And oh yeah, 27-7.
Yeah. Second play of the game, Hester picked off the pass and like ran it to the 1 yard line. So that was one of my favorites. And then it's top two, and that's where it gets tough for me, because I'd probably go in order, and I can interchange them all the time, but Ed Reed, and then number one being Sean Taylor, two of the greatest safeties of all time. Of course, rest in peace to Sean Taylor. Sean Taylor he was just an absolute monster. Can't describe it any better. Like, an absolute freak of nature. And I always tell people that if you think Sean Taylor's UM highlights are impressive, I feel like his high school highlights are so impressive.
When he played running back at Gulliver?
Yeah, man. Yeah. That's what people don't forget. People forget that. My guy never got off the field.
What part of South Florida did you grow up in?
I'm in the like South Miami area. So like Westchester. Shout out Westchester. Yeah.
So you were more south than me. I was up in Hollywood. Okay.
Oh, okay. Cool. Yeah.
So do you still, I don't know if you had season tickets, but did 2019 after the Louisiana Tech game 14-0, or did you say, you know what, to hell with this team, I'm done?
Well, there's that photo on the internet of you that's like incredible. I think it was like post-game when they ripped our.
Oh my god.
Yeah, that was a rough one. I'll say this: like, I knew this team wasn't very good right after the Georgia Tech loss. Like, just I was gonna say right after the Georgia Tech. I say in the middle.
Central Michigan, bro. Come on.
Yeah, Central Michigan was just the signs continuing to show just how not good. I'll say this, and I think it's fair. I think Manny had an awful first year. I don't think there's any way to sugarcoat it. I think in general, like he realized that in terms of a culture aspect, he really made major mistakes. I think the first one was bringing back Jeff Thomas. as talented as Jeff Thomas is, just like everything about, you know, his personality and the things that kind of transpired with him suggest that he didn't really care. And granted, he played well, and I think he helped us to a lot more wins than people realize. But I think Manny realized what his mistakes were this year. I think he found out that his team at times is unmotivated. He found out that his team has guys who simply aren't as focused to play football as he thought they were. But I think he acted on it. You know, I think he fixed the offense. I think Lashley was arguably the highest profile offensive coordinator on the market this year, and he passed up spots to come to Miami. And I know that, you know, like to resurface a quote that was said earlier, you know, spraying a turd golden. You know, I know that Lashley may not fix this team. There was bigger issues in this team than just the offense last season. But I think it does say something that Lashley is coming to Miami with off of, you know, one of the team's worst finishes in school history, and it's in Manny's second year. Now, whether or not that's simply Blake James just opening the checkbook and Rhett Lashley's wanting in, you can say that all you want, but Lashley's well aware of what he's entering and that the fact that he could be a one and done if things don't work out. So I think that I also think him upgrading the QB room was huge. You know, I think De'Aaron King, I just hope we don't overhype De'Aaron King, but I
think it's too late for that.
Oh, right. I mean, yeah, we're talking about the Miami Hurricanes fan base. There's nothing. but like necessary changes that were needed to happen. Now, does that fix everything in Miami wins 10 plus games next year? I probably would think less likely than yes. But I do think this team is just going to be a lot more exciting in general. And I don't think that's deniable. I think the offense paired with the athletes, being a new offense and a guy who has a track record of you know, improving offenses at every stop he's been at, I'm excited to see what this team looks like. Was last year an abject failure? 100%. No questions asked.
I think we, you know, drawing a parallel to Mark Richt, like you just did, I think there's something to that. I really wouldn't be surprised if Lashley comes in and we have, you know, a great year or two, and then the culture problems kind of resurface. I'm hoping that we can fix those once and for all, but that's the kind of thing that doesn't go away. We just had our guest right before you was talking about Urban Meyer and how, you know, at every stop he's just on fire for the first few years because of his, you know, the core values that he preaches and, you know, the discipline and the intensity that he brings, but then he kind of wears out his welcome. I think if you don't fix culture problems and you're just kind of slapping a high octane offense on the problem and, you know, getting transfer or like a grad transfer players that are, you know, superstars, I mean, those are temporary fixes. So I really wouldn't be surprised to see us rattle off 10 or 11 wins this season and have a great year. And then maybe the next year or the following season, we're back down to like the 7-6, 8-5, like looking around like what happened, you know?
Right. Yeah. I agree that I'm sorry. I don't mean to cut you off. But I do think you made a good point in the whole stopgap issue. Like I'll say this, and I think Manny is putting his job on the line with it. His commitment to the transfer portal is it's a double-edged sword, really. I mean, yeah. We've seen where it works. You know, I think there's certain players that it works for. I mean, obviously KJ Osborne was a great get. Yeah. It looks like Jalon Phillips is going to be a stud from everything that I've read in the opening week of spring. But there's also the misses with it. You know, I mean, Tate Martell was a guy who had clear issues, and Miami took a chance on him. Granted, they, you know, maybe Derek King works out and we forget about Tate Martell. But
Tate will be the starter next year. Doesn't matter. Come on, guys. Come on, what the hell?
I hope so.
I Let me tell you. Well, I'll say this. His commitment to the transfer portal will make or break Manny. And now, is it worrisome that, like, you know, all these transfers, you know, they have a very hit or miss. It's 50-50. They're going to hit or they're going to miss. I think, yeah, that Manny is betting on the fact that, you know, he's finding guys that are talented but just not in the right spots. And, you know, Trevon Hill was an example of a guy who was talented, got into a fight with his team, came to Miami, and we didn't see the full fruits of his labor because we had a crappy season. I mean, just quite frankly. But I think, you know, for the immediate future, for the 2020 season, if Manny can win 10 games, like, right, in a perfect world, let's say Manny wins 10 plus games, there, it's hard to not be able to sell that type of success. Now, can he sustaining it is a whole other thing, because that points back to, like you said, the culture. Can he take notes from his first year where he made his mistakes and fix it moving forward? Yeah. I would imagine so. I mean, if Miami has a good coach, then that's what it should be. Yeah. But yeah, for 2020 in just a 1 year look, it has to be an impressive year, or else I don't see how he can get out of it.
Yeah. And you know, I'm not close enough to the program at all to like bring out specific names. So I don't want anyone to think that I'm throwing specific guys or, you know, position groups. I'll just use wide receivers for an example. We bring KJ Osborne in for 1 year. The day that he stepped on campus, he is the leader. And so what does that say about our wide receiver room before KJ? And then, like you said, him staking his, you know, Manny staking his career on this is what, you know, then KJ's only there for 9 months. So where's the wide receiver room at 9 months later?
Right.
I'm with you. It's a double-edged sword, and it's kind of scary, and that's kind of why I'm thinking we might have a quick boon. I really hope Manny can actually weed out these culture problems, but it really wouldn't surprise me if we, you know, see some lightning in a bottle and then back to business as usual. The, you know, clock in, clock out mentality and Instagram superstars or whatever the Orange Bull Boys call it.
Yeah.
Okay, Tito, let me ask you just a quick round of questions, then I'll let you go. First one, give me five Canes players that you're expecting a lot from this year. And you can't say De'Ara King or Gregory Rousseau.
Wow, that's a tough one. Okay.
I know.
Number five would be I wanna see Jalen Phillips. I feel like, you know, you can't be ranked ahead of, gosh, why am I blanking on this guy's name? The defensive end from Ohio State that's going to the draft this year.
Chase Young.
There you go. He was ranked ahead of Chase Young in the 247 rankings. Now, granted, I'm not staking my entire perception of talent into rankings, but even being in that category means you have to be a pretty damn good football player. So I'd like to see a lot of things from him this year. Number four is probably Avery Huff. There's been a lot of hype with him, and people keep saying once he learns the defense, he's going to be a really impressive linebacker. And, you know, I don't mean this in any way to disrespect, you know, Quarterman or Pickney, but I just haven't seen a linebacker, and not to say these guys aren't athletic, but, like, we haven't seen a freak of nature athlete-type linebacker at Miami in a while. You know, someone who is a physical specimen, as well as a guy who can jump off the screen at you in terms of his athletic playmaking. So I'm interested to see if he can be, you know, that for Miami. Obviously, it's his first year, but I do think he can be capable of some of those things. Number three, I'd like to see Jeremiah Payton step up. You know, another guy who's supposed to be one of these scout team savages, I guess that's what you could call it. But everything from the spring practices seems to line up and say that he's one of the more talented receivers. And then number two, I'm trying to think of other guys that I'm looking forward to. Here's a good one, Jalen Rivers. I think
that's a good
best
one.
Version of this offensive line includes some form of Jalen Rivers. Now, what, and this is a separate point that I'm about to make, but it seems like the new offensive line coach, Garen Justice, is really kind of rotating and just throwing guys into different positions. It seems like that first week that was done, he had Scaife at like right guard. And I've always envisioned DeLon Scaife as a tackle. I think that's where he's played the best, and I think that's where he should be. But I don't think you finish the season without Jalen Rivers in the starting lineup for Miami at the end of this. If God willing, we have a college football season, I think he has to finish the season in the starting offensive line. I think he's that capable. Yep. And then number one would have to be – I think it would have to be – yeah, D. Wiggins. I think D. Wiggins is important. I think Wiggins, it's time for him to become the receiver we've kind of seen. We've seen the flashes of it. You know, I think he's capable of being a number one receiver, and we've seen the Louisville game and the Florida State game. Yes. We've seen that game-breaking ability. It's time now to put it all together. And I think hopefully this new wide receivers coach, Rob Likens, he has a decent track record at Arizona State, so it'll be impressive to see what.
Bro, no one puts on for D. Wiggins more than this.
Hello?
Hey, Mark. Mark, you cut out, man.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you now.
No, I was just saying how, I mean, you're just preaching to the choir because we love D. Wiggins. I mean, I think D. Wiggins is – everyone talks about Mark Pope, but I think D. Wiggins is going to be the guy. Second question, are you a Heat fan, Tito?
I am, of course. Yeah, I'm Miami everything. Man. I'm 305.
Okay,
everything.
Okay. Who do you hate more, the Detroit Pistons or LeBron James?
Oh, that's a tough one. I hate the Detroit Pistons a lot. I don't hate LeBron James. I mean, I'm definitely a little salty still that he left, but the Pistons, man, those 04, 05, 06.
You remember Game 7 in the AAA?
Of course. Yeah. Game 7. I remember that. That was a rough one. That was when Wade had the rib injury, if I'm correct.
Yep. Yeah.
And we lost that one.
Shaq couldn't win it for us.
Yeah, that's right. I do remember that game. That was rough. That was a rough loss. Yeah.
Okay, and last question, and this is because Jordan was supposed to be visiting South Florida for the first time here in a month. So we're trying to get them all acclimated and everything. Give me your top three or top five South Florida restaurants that Jordan has to check out.
Ooh, I like this. Okay. All right.
And don't say Flanagan's either.
Oh, well, I mean, Flanagan's is a staple of Miami, but yeah, I wouldn't tell him that. it depends where he's staying, because there's a lot of different spots, but I would say you gotta hit South Beach. You gotta hit South Beach and probably eat at what's the name of the restaurant right now? It's escaping me. I feel like because I just know like the Westchester staples, man. I just know I would tell you, I can tell him Pollo Tropical, but I don't know if you'd like that.
That was just about to come out of my mouth.
What was that? I'm gonna write this down. What was that last one?
Nah, you don't want to eat that, bro. You're good. It's not that crazy.
There's much better. La Careta.
You gotta do La Careta, number one. La Careta.
Is that your best Cuban place in Miami?
The Versailles or La Careta. I mean, they're owned by the same person, but yeah, one of those. Okay. I mean, I'm a La Careta guy down the street from me. But
I'm writing both of those down because I love
La Careta. I tweet about La Careta all the time, Jordan.
Yeah. After that, I'm trying to think. You could go to I guess there's Miami KYG, I think it's called, or KYU. Yeah, KYU in down South Beach. Yeah, that one's nice. Oh, Joe Stone Crabs. Actually, that'll be my first one. That'll be my top three. So KYU, La Careta, and then Joe Stone Crabs. Yeah, Joe Stone Crabs is a classic. Everyone seems to love. Yeah.
That's one of the most. That's a classic Miami one.
Sounds amazing.
Yeah, Joe Stone Crabs is fire. You'll definitely enjoy it. Yeah. If you can afford it, man, you got that big baller money. You can do Prime 112. You know, that's where they took Jalen Hurts. But I don't know. I nobody's invited me there yet, so I'm still waiting.
I'm the kind of guy that I'd rather eat like 3 pounds of peel and eat shrimp. That's like incredible, rather than eating a $80 steak. You know, I'm.
Yeah. I mean, I do like me some Prime 112. I won't lie.
Yeah, I can't say. I've never eaten there, but I've heard it's amazing. I heard they got some baller shakes. So, yeah, I mean, if you can get in there, man, you got to know some people to people.
Yeah, it's
pretty good. I'll pull out the connections, you know, that I don't have, but I'll make it work.
Yeah. Well, hey Tito, hey, thanks so much for coming on, brother. I know there was a scheduling contact there for a minute, but we're glad that you came on. We were able to talk a little Canes, talk a little Miami, and hope to have you on again.
Yeah, anytime, man. Appreciate you guys having me on.
Yeah, thanks, Tito. We appreciate it, brother. Hey, go Canes, man.
Hey, go Canes, man. Hopefully, I'm telling you, man, 9 wins. Please, God.
Please, God.
All right, guys. Take it easy.
Yeah, man. All right, man. That's good stuff. This was a long show today. We're just hitting the about the 2-hour mark almost. So.
Okay. We've done 2 hours before.
Yeah. No, we're fine. I mean,
I mean, people have long drives. I had a 12-hour drive yesterday.
And what else are any of us gonna do on quarantine? You know, I'm just
yeah,
look and stare at the ceiling and listen to Marsh and Jordan whisper into their cerebellum.
You ever think about like what you would give up to have Miami like literally win like 10 wins and go like 11-2 this year?
Oh yeah, no, that would be
or 12-2.
You know, it's such a freaking shame that the 2017 season ended on such a sour note.
Yeah.
Because, oh my gosh, that was just one of the best years of my life. I mean, it was also, it coincided with the best semester of college that I had by far. So that's a thing.
Yeah, the fall of 17, you know how people, you know, old people, they sing songs about the summer of 69?
Yeah.
That's how the fall of 17 was for me.
Oh, absolutely, man. That was by far my best college semester, and I have to say, a lot of that had to do with Miami. I mean, what was there to be sad about, you know?
Yeah.
There was no Wednesday nights where I'm sitting around thinking about football and just depressed.
Yeah. I mean, they brought me so. I mean, it's kind of sickening how much like how much of my happiness and joy and just like mood depends on my sports teams. Because like, I mean, I was just talking to. I mean, I asked Tito, you know, about that Detroit game. I don't know if you're well aware, but
yeah,
we lost it. Eastern Conference Finals Game 7. That was still the worst loss of my life, and I'm still not over it.
Yeah.
And I'm still not over us losing to like Virginia 2 years ago. I'm still not over us losing to Georgia Tech in 05. I'm still bitter.
Yeah.
Like I just want my team to do good. And I do think that this year, this isn't me BSing. I actually do think that they will be good. I could so see 9 wins. If they don't get 9 wins this year, Jordy, I will freak out.
Oh man, I love it.
This is I swear if there's not a football season, could you imagine what my life would become?
Oh my gosh.
I'd have to go work for my father. I mean, I'd have to beg my father to hire me, first of all.
That's when you know you're in trouble, is if you can't get your dad to hire you.
I mean, because I've just lived my life and prepared to get a real job in sports, and now I'm ready to graduate, and sports are canceled.
Yeah.
What the hell?
Hey, you could always move overseas, and like you could cover the basketball league, the pro basketball league in South Korea. They're starting back up in April.
All right, talk to you on Wednesday, man. Awesome talk. Are you crazy? What are you, nuts? I hate getting on planes for a 1-hour flight to L.A.
Yeah.
Think I'm going to fly across an ocean? What are you, nuts?
Dude, so I travel a lot. You know, I've been to Europe like 4 times in the last 5 years. And, you know, always make a big deal out of it, hit 5 or 6 countries. And one of the flights was from Warsaw, Poland to Toronto. I mean, it was like an 11-hour flight or something like that. And dude, I'm a big dude. Like, you know, what I usually have been at for the last 5 years on average is like 270, 6'2". And, I don't fit very comfortably. You know, my shoulders are too broad for the seat. My knees touch the seat in front of me. Dude, it's miserable. So I'll like wake up in the middle of the flight and just have a panic attack because I'm just, you know, feel so claustrophobic that I'm touching things on every single corner and angle of my body is, you know, in contact with something. It's pretty terrible, man.
I mean, I get a panic attack if I see a guy like in saggy jeans.
Oh, jeez.
I mean, that's what you get when you get a lifelong anxiety. That's Marsh. Wait, hold on. Time out. I screwed up. I asked for the people on Twitter to give us questions, and I didn't ask our guests any of the questions they asked. Do we have time to answer like two questions?
Yeah. I mean, we're pushing like 2 hours and 10 minutes. Do you want to save the questions for tomorrow, or do you want to just bang them out real quick?
Let's bang out one.
Okay, let's do it.
Because the other one's going to take me a lot of time. Yeah. Outside of Zach McLeod, what are your top three linebackers when healthy?
On this current team?
Yeah.
Dude, that's tough because we just haven't seen a lot of these guys. So, I mean, it's all conjecture. You know, it's hard to give like a solid answer. So I'm just going to have to go off of what the insiders are saying and stuff, but I'm going to go Sam Brooks, Avery Huff. And then, you know, everyone's always been high on Bradley Jennings. I've never seen Bradley Jennings play. But from what I hear, when he's healthy, he's pretty freaking good. So, that's who I'm going to go with.
Okay. It kind of was disheartening to hear Xavier talk how he thinks Brooks might be out for like a full year.
Yeah.
That sucked. But I'm going to go Avery Huff, who I'm huge on. I think he's starting next to McLeod. I'm going to say Sam Brooks just because I'm just going to say it. And yeah. Then I might get a little nuts. Jordy, I might get a little nuts and say Tyreek Austin Cave. I'm a little crazy. I'm going to go with the true freshman, Tyreek Austin Cave. He's injured right now. He had about 75,000 tackles in high school in New Jersey. I like him. I like him a lot. I also like Corey Flagg. I think Austin Cave is going to play more than the other guys. Pat Joyner, whoever the hell we've had for like 10 years. That's who I like, Jordy.
We're going to have to start screening our guests, man.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it. I love the intensity, man.
That's what I am.
You're brightening my day. So.
Oh, I haven't heard that since. I've never heard that. Thank you.
I haven't either.
All right. Who we have coming? We have a huge show on Wednesday, too. Goodness gracious.
Yeah, are we getting a brother tandem on Wednesday? Was that Wednesday?
We're getting one or both of the Urrutia brothers, Callie and Gabby. Love them both. Both great guests on this show.
Yeah, no, both incredible human beings.
We honestly might have to like just split that episode in two because I feel like we're gonna talk to those two for a minute.
Yeah, well, you know, we can play it by ear and rearrange people, but now they're locked. If you guys are
getting nuts
to do it now. Yeah, let's get nuts. Look at us.
Look at me. Yeah, we have those two. Chris Fisher from one of the Miami news outlets is coming. And then we got Brad Coons. I think that's his last name. He was a member of the 2001 Miami Hurricanes. So we're going to get nuts on Wednesday. You think you heard Energetic Marsh today? I'm going to be doing wind sprints and burpees. I'm going to be doing bear crawls to my computer to do this podcast.
Here's the thing. If we have someone on who's never met you before and they're not terrified after, then you didn't bring your A game.
Okay, but should they be terrified or should they be wanting, like, if I'm a head coach, they want to play for me. Like, they'd be like, oh, like, I want to go to war with this guy.
It should be both. It should be like, if
you're terrified of how much they respect me.
Like, if he, yeah, exactly. Exactly, Michael Scott. Like, if they see in the parking lot, they're going to lock their door. But they're also like, you know what? I'd go to war with that guy.
Yeah, he could date my daughter. Well, hey, man, this was a great show. I loved it. I loved it. Even though I'm in the damn mountains, I'm in the hills have eyes. I have people looking at me like I'm a freak. I've been here for 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
It was one of our best episodes, I think.
No, it was. It was good stuff.
And thank you to all of our guests. I don't even remember who we had. We had Tito. We had Xavier. We had Justin.
Yeah.
You guys are great.
That's it. No, it was good stuff. It was good stuff.
Got anything else to say, Jordy?
No, sir. Just hungry. I got to go eat. I work through dinner. So.
I'm going to keep starving myself so I can get a summer body. All right. As always, go Canes. Stay safe out there. Stay in court, please, for the love of God.
Go
Greeks in South Florida. Decide don't go to Sandbar Sunday. But we love you, and we'll talk to you on Wednesday. Go Canes.
Go Canes.